Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on reforming Social Security when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. We all know that. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on the pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make? Prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit and eat it? Why does the government get paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, President Bush wants to reform the Social Security system. He says that it's a crisis. He says that it's important. He says that it needs to be done now. And furthermore, if it isn't done now, it's going to cost more if we wait. I showed you some independent reports that tell us that probably it'll cost about $1.5 trillion a year every year that we wait to reform the system. Paul O'Neill, the former Secretary of the Treasury, said it ought to be scrapped. I agree with Paul O'Neill, it ought to be scrapped. And the reason that I think it ought to be scrapped is because it's economically unviable. It was economically unviable, statistically. It was mathematically unviable when it was created back in 1935. Because for every bean that you put in, you took two out. Now, in the early days of a Ponzi scheme, you get a lot of people to put money into the deal, and then just a few people draw out. As the number of people who are putting into the deal grows, there are fewer and fewer people that are coming into the system, and that's where Social Security is today. The Social Security system is going to take on 50 million new beneficiaries over the next 20 years. Now, there's 50 million drawing out of it today. They're going to take 50 more and add to that over the next 20 years. But the number of people that are going into the system to pay those 50 million is only 15% of the workforce. The very bare minimum for every one person that you put onto the dole, you have to put one person into the work system to balance that out. Bare minimum. Furthermore, if you wanted to make the system viable, you have to have 16 people in the system paying in for everyone drawing out, and you have to keep that ratio 16 to 1. That's what you had back in 1957. 16 people paying in, one person drawing out. Today it's 2 to 1. It was 80 to 1 in 1940. Now, I pointed that out to you earlier. So you don't have to be a math whiz to see that Social Security is incurable. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Unless you can figure out some way to get more people to join the system. Now, over the years, they did that. See, when they started it out, they only put in the industrial workers. As time progressed along, then they put in the preachers. Then they put in the public service workers. Then they put in the farmers. I mean, they've got everybody in the system that they can think of. Well, anybody that'll get into it, they've got into it. Well, all except Congress. Congress has their own system, their own retirement system. The railroad guys, they have their own retirement system. Congress's system evidently is self-sustaining. The railroad system evidently is self-sustaining. I haven't heard anybody complain about those two systems, but Social Security is not self-sustaining. And Social Security and the income tax go together like a horse and carriage. You can't have one without the other. In fact, when you got Social Security, you got the income tax on labor. See, labor's not taxable. Labor is property. So you're out here working at General Motors, and every week, you know, you get $10 an hour, and they should be paying you $400 a week, but they don't. They pay you $300 or $310. So what happened to that $90 or $100? Well, it was taxed. And you say, well, that's a tax on my labor. No, it doesn't. No, sir. And that's because labor is property, and property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States of America. Never. It isn't now. Hasn't been. I hope it never is. Property isn't taxed here. And no, I'm not from Mars and I'm not from Oort. So what happened? What did you do to create a system, an environment, where General Motors is taking about 25% of what you create and produce when you work there and paying it over to the government? How did that come to be? I'm going to listen to this. We'll take a look at labor and labor relations, which comes from American jurisprudence, AMJUR. AMJUR is a legal encyclopedia, where we look at the constitutional protection of your right to work. In labor laws, the term labor may be used in a comprehensive sense, as including those who toil with their brains, as well as those performing manual work. Now, whether you're an insurance salesman or whether you're a ditch digger, the term labor is used in a comprehensive sense and covers all those, whether they work with their brains or work with their backs. Now, the right to labor and to its protection from unlawful interference is a constitutional as well as a common law right, and every man has a natural right to the fruits of his own industry. Labor is deemed to be property, especially within the meaning of constitutional guarantees. Thus, the right to acquire property includes the right to acquire property by labor. The right to earn wages is just as much property and within the protection of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution as are earned wages. Now, since the right to labor is protected by the 14th Amendment and numerous guarantees of state constitutions, one cannot be deprived of such right by arbitrary mandate of the legislature, and it merits legal protection. Such right is likewise embraced by the 5th Amendment to the Federal Constitution. So you have a right to your labor. So back in the 1930s, the New Deal administration was faced with a dilemma. They wanted to implement the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, but they had a problem with our Constitution, a problem that they didn't have in Russia, a problem that they don't have in China. We got this constitutional problem here. Now, if we try to pass a constitutional amendment, that gets pretty sticky. So they came up with a Social Security program, and they said Henry Ford made $30 million in 1930, and that's unreal. That's unrealistic. That's unfair, and we ought to tax that. So they came up with a Social Security program, and I mentioned in the last program, it passed constitutional muster because it's an excise tax. It's an excise tax on business. Now, it is true that you pay a portion of that tax out of your labor, out of your wages. That's true. But it's called the doctrine of unjust enrichment. You see, the employer gets nothing out of it and has to pay into it. You get 100% of the benefit. So therefore, under the common law, you can be taxed half of it because otherwise it would violate the doctrine of unjust enrichment. So the Social Security tax is not a tax on your labor. It's not a tax on you. It's an excise tax on business for which you can be required to contribute up to 50% because you receive 100% of the benefits. That's just the operation of law. It's the way it's been for thousands of years. Now, in order for us to tax your labor, to participate in this program, we had to get you to volunteer. So they enacted Social Security, and they said, look, we're going to give you all these benefits. Now, had you been obeying God and keeping His commandments, you'd have said, wait a minute. If they're going to give this to me, where are they going to get it from? Well, first of all, they got to take it from somebody else. Government doesn't have any money. Government doesn't have any wealth. Government doesn't have any means by which it can create wealth. They create money. They don't create wealth. Wealth comes out of the ground. Wealth requires labor, raw materials, somebody acting upon it to create airplanes and automobiles. Corn and wheat and beans and honey and oil. That's labor. So they came up with a Social Security scheme, and they said, we're going to give you all these benefits, and we're going to take it away from Henry Ford. And you said, well, that sounds good to me. But remember, God said, thou shalt not steal. So you said, well, let's steal it from Henry Ford, because he's got so much. Now let's give it to the poor people, because they've got so little. Sounds just like Robin Hood, doesn't it? We'll rob from the rich and give to the poor. Now, there's a penalty to pay when you do that, because when you signed up for Social Security so that you could participate in the theft from the other people out there, you brought upon yourself the penalty for theft, which is 2, 4, 5, or 7 times the amount of the theft. That's why America is in debt up over our eyeballs. We've been stealing for so long from so many that we have accumulated a tremendous penalty, tremendous penalty. So in 1942, Congress comes along and says, well, we got this war going on over here, and we need some extra money. So they went to the Constitution, and the Constitution provides for a direct tax on everybody for a period of 2 years during time of war. So they cobbled that together with the Social Security Act, and here's what they came up with. In 1942, was called the withholding provision on the income tax. See, the income tax was created back in 1913-14 with the 16th Amendment. Well, that income tax couldn't tax your labor because labor is property. And the excise tax isn't a tax on property. The income tax is an excise tax. It's a tax on a privilege. And so what's the privilege? It's the privilege for working in corporate capacity and stealing from Henry Ford by way of commercial paper. So it violates thou shalt not steal. It violates you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. It violates you shall not have another God before me. That's Social Security. All right, now, that tax expired in May of 1944. So they took the tax off and left the withholding provision on. So they continued to take your money, but they didn't take your money to finance the war under the provision for the two-year period during war. They continued taxing your labor because you volunteered into Social Security. Social Security is the nexus to the income tax. Social Security is voluntary. Now you wanted it, and you got it. So now that you got it, live with it. As Jesus said, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. Your income belongs to Caesar because you gave it to him. When you signed up for Social Security, you agreed to give all of your labor for all of your life to your God, the United States of America. The United States of America says, we will supply all of your necessities. Remember? All of your necessities. For all of your life. And they do. So far, they've been able to perform on that. But in order to do that, they continually have to raise the percentage of the tax base. So they raise the percentage, and then they raise the amount of money that they're taxing. For instance, in the early days, 1951, they took 2.25% of the money that you earned up to $3,600. So anything over $3,600 wasn't taxed. As time progressed, they now have it up to around $80,000. So everything that you make up to $80,000 is now being taxed. That includes about 95% of the money earned in America, because once you get up to $100,000 a year, you're in the top 5% of income earners. So 95% of us are being taxed. And the 5% that make millions, well, they pay the tax up to $100,000 and they don't pay any more. But they keep raising. Notice that? They keep raising the amount that we tax, the percentage that we tax, and the number of people that are coming into the workplace is going down, and the number of people that are drawing benefits out is going up. Now, that's economically, or that's mathematically unsustainable. I mentioned that to you last time. It's like putting two beans in, taking one out. Put two beans in, take one out. Put two beans in, take one out. That jar is going to overflow, and that's wonderful, and that's what we want. Social Security doesn't work like that. When you put in one bean, you take two out. You put in one bean, you take two out. And at some point in time, the jar is going to become empty. And that's where we're headed. And that's why George Bush says we got to solve this problem. We got to do something. Now, here's an article here by the Mogambo. Actually, his name is Richard Doughty, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. And this comes from Kitco.com. So this is a newsletter from Kitco, put out every week. You can get a copy of it. It's free. Just go onto the web. Go to Kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com, and then scroll down to Doughty, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y, also known as the Mogambo Guru. Well, on page two, he has a little couple, three paragraphs there that I think are pretty illustrative of the facts that I'm giving you. He reads this way. It says, in a similar vein, Robert B. sent me a letter written by Jesse George Murray, written to his nephew Charlie in 1990. Jesse Murray was an 80-year-old retired newspaper man, author, diplomat. He was a type A overachiever and intellectual. And here's what he wrote to his nephew. He said, quote, the Constitution of the United States, every single word of it, is directed to one end, and one end only, and that is to protect the ordinary citizen from the government. That's all it is. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, anytime someone is tempted to put his faith in the government of the United States, let him go back and read one by one the treaties signed by our government with the American Indians, if you think that the United States government is trustworthy. Now, he goes on to say, and you might want to make this as your own personal credo. He said, I never, never, never trust a government, any government, my own government, or any other government. Unquote. Now, his example is excellent, and here's what he wrote to his nephew. He said, in 1940, our government urged us all to buy war bonds, the Series E, typical of the rest. It cost $18.75. And then when it matured, they would pay you $25. Well, in 1940, an excellent pair of good leather Tom McCann shoes cost $3.30. Now, I know that you, like me, are thinking to yourself, oh, God, this sounds like one of those math problems on the SAT test. And there's going to be a train leaving Chicago heading west at 30 miles an hour, and your stomach starts to hurt. But relax. He does all the math for you. He goes on to say, so it took 6.5 pairs of shoes to buy one bond. 10 years later, that same pair of shoes cost $25. So to buy a bond cost 6.5 pairs of shoes. And when you went in to redeem the bond, the buyer got back just one pair of shoes. Now, is that very difficult for you to understand? I don't know how he could have made it any clearer or any simpler. Now, all of you old people out there that belong to the AARP and are drawing Social Security, over the years, you were paying in dollars that had greater value. Those dollars were immediately paid out to somebody drawing during those years. Now it's your turn to draw. Now that you've paid in all of those 100-cent dollars, you're going to be paid back 50-cent dollars and 25-cent dollars. That's the bottom line. And that's why you old people are having trouble making ends meet. Now, last year, they raised the Social Security benefits by, I think it was 3.2%. My God, boys and girls, inflation's running at over 6%. I know the government doesn't admit that. They only admit to 3%. And that's why they only gave you a 3% raise. Real estate values here in the United States are running in double digits right now and have been for the last 3 years. Nationwide, they're up around 12-14%. That's not because the house is becoming less termite infested. That isn't because the roof is becoming better and better every year. Roofs deteriorate every year. Termites eat more and more of the building. Your house becomes less and less valuable in real terms every year. So the increased value is called inflation, boys and girls. Inflation, that's not your friend. Death is not your friend. Inflation isn't your friend. And anybody that tells you it is lying to you. And if you believe it, well, then you're deceived. That's where reality's at. Now, most Americans believe that inflation's their friend. They love it. Well, get right after it. I woke up one day and I said, well, I don't think that's true, so I'm going to opt out of the Social Security program. I'm going to opt out of Social Security. I opted out of income tax. Now, don't get mad at me now because I don't have any income. I avoid income. Income's bad for me. Income is like death and taxes. I don't want it. Get it away from me. So I avoid income and I concentrate on property. Property. Now, property's never been assessed or taxed in this country. We saw that in Diefendorf versus Galay in the last program. I showed you that. Now, don't get mad at me. I read it right out of Diefendorf versus Galay. That's the Supreme Court of Idaho. They explained it to you very plainly. Property. Go look up the word property. It's the right that you have in something to the exclusion of everybody else in the universe. You can exclude God Almighty himself from your property. Because if you own it, God can't. And if God owns it, you can't. There's only one owner of property. And it's either you or somebody else. Now, you don't own your automobile. It's property, but it's not your property. You don't own your home. That's property also, but you don't own that property. You're paying rent on it. You're paying property tax on your home. You're paying a registration fee on your automobile. And if you don't pay the registration fee or you don't pay the taxes, it'll be taken away from you. And if you don't think so, test it. See how long you can keep your house without paying the property tax. All you can do is rent it. It's like renting an apartment. You just don't pay your rent on that apartment. See how long you can stay in there. So the Magambo goes on to say, he says, so I rushed to the fortune teller to have a seance with the spirits from beyond, hoping to get a message to this Murray fella, because I know how to make it clearer. He left out the part about why the shoes cost $25 10 years later. Because the damn government both raised taxes and fees to pay off those bonds, which raised costs, so everyone had to raise their prices. And the government likewise created excess credit and money to pay their debts, which debased the money and reduced its purchasing power. Ergo, and I love saying ergo, inflation soared. The result? Well, you know. That just thinking about this crap makes me go crazy, so I'll force myself to turn back to Mr. Murray, who lucidly goes on to announce, in 10 years, our government cheated its trusting citizens, those who bought those bonds in 1940, out of 5.5 pairs of shoes. Inflation, and let us never forget it, is not an impersonal force, such as an earthquake or a volcano, a tornado or a tidal wave. Inflation is a policy consciously adopted or rejected by politicians in government. Unquote. Now that's where that story is at. Now, if you want to stay in Social Security and income tax, I don't want to get in your way. I mean, everybody has a right to choose, and that's what I love about America. We have a right to choose. Unfortunately, those of us that got educated in the public schools were indoctrinated, and we were told that we had to get a Social Security number. I was told it was the law. You know, until I was about 40 years old, I thought it's the law. You have to do that. Then I found out that, well, that's not true. Now, of course, some people jump to conclusions here, and I want to clarify this. They assume that the income tax is voluntary, so therefore, I'm not going to volunteer anymore. No. Wait a minute. You volunteered when you got your Social Security number. It's just like an enlistment contract in the Army. Now you're a volunteer in the Army. Don't tell the sergeant you ain't peeling potatoes. Don't tell the sergeant that you're not opening your footlocker without a search warrant. I mean, that isn't going to fly anywhere. Now, if you're taking the benefits, then you have to pay the tax. So why don't you think about a wild new concept? Why don't you stop taking these benefits and stop paying the tax? I know it's a little wild and off the wall, but, you know, mull it over a little bit. If you didn't take the benefits, well, then why should you pay the tax? And if you're not entitled to the benefits, now I'm 65 years old and I don't draw Social Security. I'm probably one of about three or four other people in this country that believe that it's unscriptural and wrong for me to take something from somebody else without paying for it. So I'm not taking anything. You people took from me. You took my Social Security taxes from 1951 to 1978. And I said, well, all right, now that you've taken them, be happy with it, because I'm not going to participate with you in this criminal activity any further. And I dropped out. Now, I'm not encouraging anybody else to drop out, because I don't know what's good for you. You'll have to decide that for yourself. I'm not here on some crusade telling people that they shouldn't pay their income tax or that they should drop out of Social Security. I'm just here to give you the facts, and then you can take those facts and then you can go do something with it. You know, if you want to. If you don't want to, that's fine too. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't hurt me. Now, I mentioned the Social Security was a scheme. Did you hear that word, scheme? Well, I didn't pick that word up from no place, nowhere. I picked that up from the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, go look up the word scheme in the dictionary. Scheme, would you? S-C-H-E-M-E. What is a scheme, anyway? Well, a scheme is a plan. It's a plan that has evil motive or intent attributed to it. It's more than just a plan. It's an evil plan. Something wrong with the plan. Now, the Supreme Court said in a case here called... see if I got the name of it here. Fleming versus Nestor. Back about 1960. Cited at 363 U.S. 603. That's Fleming versus Nestor. 363 U.S. 603. This guy, Nestor, is a, I think he's a Romanian. And he lives here in the United States for quite a few years. And he pays into Social Security, but he's a communist. And he decides that, well, I guess the government decided it for him, that they were going to deport him back to Romania. So they deported him back to Romania. And he says, well, wait a minute, you got to pay me my Social Security benefits. And they denied it to him. They said, well, you paid into it, but you're not going to get it out. Now, went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, well, yeah, you know, you don't have any property rights in Social Security, and if the government doesn't want to pay it to you, they don't have to. And that's where you're at, and that's where I'm at, and everybody else. It's a franchise, and if they want to pay you, they will, and if they don't want to pay you, they won't. That's the bottom line. That's the final analysis on Social Security. It's a social welfare scheme. It has evil intent attached to it. It's a criminal artifice that is prohibited by God. I'll show you that when we proceed along here a little bit more. And as a result of that, there's a penalty that we pay, and the 16% or 15% if you're self-employed that you're paying for Social Security is the penalty that you're paying month in and month out for this program in violation of the laws of God. Now, if you say, well, and then most people do, you know, most people would rather pay a 90% income tax than they would pay a 10% tithe to God. And if you have to choose between paying God and paying the government, you choose the government every time. In fact, you've already done that. Haven't you? Well, the Supreme Court goes on to say, it's hardly profitable to engage in conceptualizations regarding earned rights and gratuities. The right to Social Security benefits is in one sense earned, for the nature or the entire scheme rests on the legislative judgment that those who in their productive years were functioning members of the economy and may justly call upon that economy in their later years for protection from the rigors of the poorhouse as well as from the haunting fear that such a lot awaits them when journey's end is near. Sounds poetic, doesn't it? Halvering v. Davis, cited at 301 U.S. 641, is where they got that. But the practical effectuation of that judgment has of necessity called forth a highly complex and interrelated statutory structure. Integrated treatment of the manifold specific problems presented by the Social Security program demands more than a mere generalization. That program was designed to function into the indefinite future, and its specific provisions rest on predictions as to expected economic conditions which must inevitably prove less than wholly accurate, and upon judgments and preferences as to the proper allocation of the nation's resources, which evolving economic and social conditions will of necessity in some degree modify. Put another way, changes happen, boys and girls, and when they do, look out. They go on to say, to engraft upon the Social Security system a concept of accrued property rights would deprive it of the flexibility and boldness in adjustment to ever-changing conditions which it demands. There are no property rights attached to Social Security, and the Supreme Court just told you that. So if you think you got some right there, you got another thing coming. Now, so far, they've been paying in inflated dollars less than you paid in. They pay you more dollars but less purchasing power. They give you $25, which equals one pair of shoes. You pay in six pairs of shoes, and you get back in purchasing power one pair of shoes. Now, government's been doing that to us for generations. You'd think that Americans would wake up to that. They haven't yet. Some have. I mean, there are some individuals out there that can do the arithmetic and say, wait a minute, they're ripping us off. They're stealing from us. They're cheating us. This isn't right. This doesn't benefit me. But the average guy, he says, I'm going to vote against that George Bush if he tampers with the third rail of politics called Social Security. I'd say, well, right on, Mr. President. Now, the best thing that you can do for Social Security is to abolish it and quit stealing the wealth of the people paying into it and let those people take care of themselves. And then the retirement, you know, people like me, I don't need Social Security retirement. And as a matter of fact, I would venture to guess if you got right down on the bottom line, most Americans don't need it. And those that do need it need to be taken care of. And in the Bible, there is a welfare system. And that welfare system is called third tithe. Now, if we go back and practice that, we wouldn't have had this problem to start with. And the first place, the first line of defense against poverty and want is the family, which we in America have destroyed. The family in America is toast. It's history. We sleep together, and we have sexual relations together, but we don't have families. Why we've got queers living together, for crying out loud, and call those families. So the family structure has been destroyed. And as a result of that, all of you old people out there relying on Social Security, which, by the way, is going to collapse with or without George Bush. You don't need George Bush to reform Social Security. It'll collapse of and by itself. My common sense says that since this ship is going to hit the iceberg, whether we like it or not, we should be planning on how are we going to get off this ship before it sinks. You should be looking ahead. Social Security is mathematically unviable. It always has been. Just like Ponzi. Now, it goes on for a long time. It's been going on for 70 years, and it'll go on for another 30, at least. Social Security is going to continue on for 30 years. And those of you that are drawing on it right now will live out your lives on Social Security, safe in the knowledge that you're living off of somebody else's work. Not your work, somebody else's. See, you never did pay in enough. You never paid in enough for what you're drawing out. And as we progress along, people like me would have paid in more than they're going to get out of it. So you've got these two dilemmas called the horns of a dilemma. You're either going to pay in more than you're going to get out, which means that you're getting ripped off, or you're going to draw out more than you paid in, which means you're going to rip off somebody else. But in any event, it's a theft. It's either a theft against you, or it's you stealing from somebody else. Social Security is theft, pure and simple. Taking something from somebody and giving it to somebody else without their consent is theft. So there's the story on the Fleming v. Nestor story. But it's better than that. There's better than that. And there's another part to the story that we should look at, and it's called Bowen versus Agencies Opposed to Social Security Entrapment. And when you find out about the theft and then you want to change it, the Supreme Court has something to say about that also, and they decided that about 1986. Before I get into Fleming v. Nestor, let me give you a caveat here. The opinions, the beliefs, the comments, the views and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. And if you'd like more information about the law or an editorial review, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school. That number again, 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, back about 1950, the Social Security Administration needed more money. And so they're kind of fishing around. They're saying, well, how are we going to get more money? And they said, well, why don't we go to the states? Because all of the states have a retirement program for their employees. And let's bring all of the state employees into the Social Security system. So Congress enacted a provision called 418G and attached that to the Social Security Act. Now, 418G was a provision that said to the employees of California and Alaska and Nevada and everybody else, they said, look, join up with Social Security because we got this real neat retirement program called Social Security. And if you do that, you're going to get all these neat benefits and so on and so forth, which indeed offered them more than they had with their independent retirement program. Their retirement program provided for retirement. But Social Security provides for much more than retirement. For instance, President Bush in 2004 got through a free drug program for the seniors. So that means that you can get your hit of smack, you know, from Rexall and Pfizer, and the government will pay for it. Well, what it means is that some other taxpayer will pay for your drug habit. That's what the bottom line is. So that's a benefit that you couldn't get, you know, with the ordinary retirement program, which was just going to pay you money when you got to be old and retired from work. So that sounded a whole lot better than what they had. And then, of course, the question came up, but what if we don't like it at some time in the future? So they overcame that objection by putting in 418G that says, well, now, if you don't like the program, give us 36 months notice and you can opt out of it. Well, that was the closing argument. So many of the, not all, but many of the states joined into the program. Now, Governor Warren signed up for California. Remember Earl Warren? He was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court later. But when this came about 1950, he was the governor of California. He was the Attorney General of California at one time, as I recall. And he was a lawyer, and he became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. You'd think that this guy was pretty knowledgeable in contracts and law, wouldn't you? All right, so California joins up. Now, over the years, Social Security becomes less and less attractive as it takes more and more money and pays out less and less benefits, like all Ponzi schemes do over time. More and more people start drawing out, and fewer people are coming in. And as a result of that, the system collapses. So to keep the system from collapsing, you've got to get more and more people in. So they're constantly out fishing around getting more people. Now, the people that they're getting in now are all of these illegal aliens coming into the country, 2,000 of them a day. They go into the workforce, and they're taking those Social Security dollars out of those people to keep that system afloat. They got to have new people coming in, boys and girls. Let me show you how this works while we're on the subject, and I'll come back to 418G. Remember the classic Ponzi where a guy comes up to you and he says, look, sign here, put your name at the bottom of this list, and then you send this out to five of your friends, who in turn send it out to five of their friends, who in turn sends it out to five of their friends, and when your name reaches the top of the list, then you got five people over here that you sent this out to, in addition to these five, you'll get 25 bottles of whiskey for the one bottle that you put in. Now, that sounds pretty good. I buy a bottle of whiskey and send this off to, no, five bottles, I'll take that back. I got to buy five bottles of whiskey and send it to the five guys that are on the list, one to each one of them. Add my name to the bottom of the list and send it out to five more guys. Okay, and then the reward is I get 25 bottles of whiskey for the five bottles of whiskey that I sent out. All right. You ever done that? Well, if you haven't, then it shows you were smarter than we gave you credit for. And if you did you learn anything from that, partner? Well, now the early guys in the game, they get their 25 bottles of whiskey, but the guys that are further down don't get paid. And let me show you why this thing collapses. If you take five guys times five, that equals 25. Now take 25 times five, and then that equals 125. So you take 125 times five, and that equals 3,125. Times 5 is 78,125 times 5 is 1,953,125 times 5, and you get 48,828,125 times 5, and that's 1,220,000,000 times 5, and all of a sudden, it takes all the people in the world. That's where Social Security is. You haven't got enough people in the world to keep this thing floating. So in 1950, the Congress, realizing that they've got to have more people in the system, because as more people come into the system, then you got more people that you can collect the tax from to pay out to the fewer beneficiaries. Well, Russell Harvey joined Social Security in 54. He paid into it for 2 years and drew out the maximum benefits until he died in 1967. It was a wonderful deal from him. He bought the five bottles of whiskey and he collected the 25. Heck of a deal. Unfortunately, the next tier, you got to go to 125 people, and then the next tier, you got to go to 3,125, and the next tier, and so on down the line, until finally you run out of people. And that's what happens here in Bowen versus Agencies Opposed to Social Security Entrapment, decided in June of 1986 by the United States Supreme Court. And what happened was is that Alaska decided to opt out, and so Alaska is a small state, and so they sent their 36-month notice, and they opted out, and then Nevada, they decided to opt out because the benefits were getting to be less and less and the premiums were getting to be higher and higher. And so they opted out. And then California decided, well, we'll opt out. Now, California's got several million public employees. So Congress went into emergency session and they enacted a new law. And it said, once in, always in, 418G is repealed. You can't opt out. Well, that's the way Social Security started out. See, in 1935, if you didn't like it, you could opt out. In 1939, Congress came in and said, once in, always in. Now, you can get out, but it has to be under the doctrine of fraud. You can't just resign from Social Security. You got to have a cause. You got to have a reason. Fraud is the only way out. Well, it's the only way out that I know of. If there's some other way out, I don't know how to do that. So here's California back in the 1980s, and they want to opt out of Social Security and take their several million public employees out. And Congress goes into emergency session and changes the law. Now, in 1950, the agreement was, if you don't like the Social Security program, give us 36 months notice and you can opt out. In 1984, when they executed the agreement and said, okay, we want out, then the Congress comes in and says, once in, always in, you can't do that. Isn't that an ex post facto law? Isn't that immoral? Isn't that wrong? Isn't that a violation of a contractual obligation? Yeah, it's all of that and more. But Congress did it. And remember, do you remember what the United States government did to the American Indians? Can you point to one treaty that the United States government entered into with the Indians in United States? Can you point to one treaty where we upheld our agreement? If you know of any such agreement that we upheld, that we followed through on with the Indians, would you send that to me and let me know so that I can put that in my records and files and broadcast that to the world? I would like to know of just one obligation that the United States government actually honored that it made with the American Indians. One. Not five or ten, just one. Let me know what it is, would you? All right. So now here's an agreement. Here's an obligation that the United States government took on with the public employees of California, and then they changed the law. So let me read you some of the pertinent points that the Supreme Court of the United States pointed out as a matter of law under the Social Security Act. Now, they ruled against the public employees of California. They're still in the Social Security system, whether they like it or not. They tried to get out. They tried to exercise their rights under 418G, and the Supreme Court said, you cannot exercise your rights under 418G, and here's why. Listen to this. The Supreme Court says the Social Security Act of 1935, 49 Statute 620 as amended, at 42 U.S.C. 301 et seq., established an insurance program for persons working in industry and commerce as a long-run safeguard against the occurrence of old age dependency. Notice the word commerce here. Canaanite trafficking is what it's called in the Bible. Canaanite trafficking. They went on to say, to ensure that this important program could evolve as economic and social conditions changed, Congress expressly reserved to itself the right to alter, amend, or repeal any provision of the Act in 42 U.S.C. 1304. Did you catch that? So in the contract, Congress has reserved the right to alter it, reform it, or to amend it without notice to the participants. And they did. The Supreme Court went on to say that states enter the system by executing an agreement, a 418 agreement, with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, also known as the Secretary. The Supreme Court went on to say that as of 1983, some 9.4 million out of approximately 13.2 million state and local employees participated in the Social Security system. Then on page 10, here comes the kicker, page 10. Congress anticipated that it would be necessary to respond to ever-changing conditions with flexibility and boldness. And therefore, Congress included in the Act a clause expressly reserving to it, the Congress, the right to alter, amend, or repeal any provision of the Act at section 1104 of statutes, 49 Statute 648, cited at 42 U.S.C. 1304. And that provision makes express what is implicit in the institutional needs of the program. Now, as the appellees must concede, the Act itself, including the original version of 418G, created no contractual rights. You have no contractual rights, boys and girls, in Social Security. And they cite Fleming versus Nestor. Now, I just read to you Fleming versus Nestor, where the Supreme Court, you know, 20 years earlier said, not only are there no contractual rights in Social Security, it is a scheme. Social Security is a criminal scheme thought up by politicians to rob you. And they have, and they did, and they still are. And they're going to continue. Now, of course, President Bush is now caught on the horns of a dilemma. What are we going to do with the Social Security problem? Just a few years ago, under Jimmy Carter, they reformed Social Security by raising taxes and cutting benefits, I think. And then under Reagan, you know, and when they did it with Carter, they said, no, it's cured for 50 years. What if I came to you and I said, hey, I got a program here that'll last for 50 years. I got a Ponzi scheme that'll go on for 50 years. Want to join? Well, yeah, if you're filled with avarice and you want to steal from people, you would. You know, if it's only going to last for 50 years, then it's not self-sustaining, is it? And so Reagan came into office and Social Security was in crisis again. They hadn't raised the taxes enough. So they raised the taxes plenty. And they said, we're going to develop a surplus in Social Security. And they did. And they've taken that surplus and they've spent it on the general welfare, on the general budget, and put IOUs into the Social Security. They call it a trust fund. That's a joke. There's no trust fund there. Go read the Act, 42 U.S.C. 301 through 335. There's no trust fund. You're paid directly out of the public treasury. So there's another lie. Maybe it's a damn lie. But that's the way government is. Government lies to you. Not all the time. They only lie to you some of the time. They tell you the truth 75% of the time. Then they lie to you 25% of the time so that they can keep you deceived 100% of the time. That's the nature of the beast. So now we'll wake up and smell the coffee. Now there's a connecting link that goes along with this program here. If I can find it here. It's called the connecting link. And then there's 16 of these connecting links, 16 parts in this nexus. And what we're participating in here are mortgages, Social Security, Federal Reserve notes, government-granted privileges, equitable interests, bank and corporate credit cards, stocks and negotiable instruments, bonds, public business licenses, permits, public interest professions, interest accounts, checks, insurance, marriage license, and citizenship. Those are things that everybody recognizes. You know all about mortgages. But you know, if you go to a thesaurus, you know, you can get words, you know, that mean the same. We call those synonyms. Mortgages, you know, and notes and things like that. Well, they're antonyms. They're opposites. Well, the common law is the antonym. It's the opposite to the civil law and income. We've been taught to practice mortgages. The common law practices land held and fee simple. Social Security is the opposite to labor. You have a property right in your labor. Social Security takes your property right away from you with your voluntary consent. Federal Reserve notes are the opposite to substance. Government-granted privileges is the exact opposite to inalienable rights. Equitable interests are the opposite to property. Bank and corporate credit cards are the opposite to gold and silver. Stocks and negotiable instruments are the opposite to private ownership. Bonds are the opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the opposite to private business. Permits are the opposite to private rights. Public interest professions are the opposite to common law occupations. Interest-bearing accounts are the opposite to substance and chattels. Checks, C-H-E-C-K-S, are the opposite to warehouse receipts and checks, C-H-E-Q-U-E-S. Insurance is the opposite to individual responsibility. Marriage license is the opposite to patriarchal family. Citizenship is the opposite to denizen or denizenship. The common law teaches us land held in fee simple, labor, substance, inalienable rights, property, gold and silver, private ownership, private property, private business, private rights, common law occupation, substance and chattels, warehouse receipts and C-H-E-Q-U-E-S, checks, not C-H-E-C-K-S, and individual responsibility in patriarchal family and denizenship. We don't practice the common law. We don't practice increase. We practice the civil law and income in this country. Well, now, if you want to practice the civil law and income, then render to Caesar that which is Caesar's, which is what Jesus told you. On the other hand, if you don't want to participate in income tax, then why don't you practice tithing? If you don't want to practice income, why don't you practice increase? Why don't you think about property instead of profit? I know these are wild new ideas, but you know, these are the opposites to the indoctrination that we all received in public school. And after all, why would our masters want to educate us? There's nothing worse than an educated slave. I mean, the sucker might want to get his freedom. People who believe they're free aren't seeking freedom. They believe they already possess it. Well, I'm about out of time. We gotta leave it right there. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll talk more about reforming Social Security next time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the internet. And for more information, just go to the georgegordon.org webpage. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There's the signal. Says time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.